Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com.
Hey, now everybody, welcome to a special episode of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson, sitting over Jason Rugard. He's going to tell us what we're talking about.
This is the 29th retro we've done, and we're talking the Cell today. We're talking about that 2000 cult classic. It can be a cult classic, right?
Because this is it a cult classic?
I think it's fondly remembered. I actually didn't remember it fondly, but grew fonder of it as we watched it.
Remember it fondly either, but I guess it would be a cult classic because it is a murder movie. It's very weird.
This was a huge hit in its day, though. Number one at the box office, just did $28 million. This would have gone on to make about $120 million in today's money. So big hit for Jennifer Lopez and Vince Vaughn, who is greatly miscast in this film, I believe.
Really?
You think Vaughn's good in this?
You didn't like him in this? Yeah, I thought it was fine.
First of all, let me ask you this, on all seriousness. Is there an actor who's looked like shit in more of his movies than Vince Vaughn?
Oh, no. Of course not. Vince Vaughn always looks like he's coming off of cocaine and alcohol bender.
It looks like somebody just woke him up in every scene. He's got bedhead in 95% of this fucking movie. And it's like most actors go on some sort of gym regimen to get ready for their roles. It seems like you said he goes on an alcohol bender before he goes on set.
Yeah, he looks like he's coming down from a week-long high. But that's Vince Vaughn. I mean, it kind of works here because he's playing an FBI agent who is so obsessed with kind of saving this missing girl that he's up all the time, right? He's always going. He's always moving.
Yeah, he's under the clock. It works here, but I mean, I've seen it in other things. And this was during Vince Vaughn's quote-unquote dark period, when like Clay Pigeons, Psycho, this, where he was trying to change his image, even Return to Paradise, which I think is overlooked. He was trying to get away from the swingers guy, although he'd eventually round back to that and be in some monster hits at the box office. You look at his track record.
Sure. And I mean, Fred Claus.
I mean, A Couple's Retreat, Four Christmases. He's in a lot. I mean, even Fred Claus made money. He's been in big hits over the years. Obviously, Wedding Crashers goes without saying. But in this movie, he has zero chemistry with Jennifer Lopez. And good thing they're not portrayed as lovers of any type.
Yeah, I don't think that that's a problem, though, right?
I just found them to be just kind of uncomfortable holding the screen together. And they don't have a lot of scenes together.
Is two separate movies, right? The Jennifer Lopez movie is completely separate from the Vince Vaughn movie. These two worlds kind of collide in this and feel very different on the screen.
Yes.
And I think purposefully.
We'll get into the story in just a second. A little background on this. It premiered August 19th, 2000, number one at the box office. Quickly fell by 40%, but stayed in the top 10 for its first 4 weeks. So it was a hit. People did talk about this in the day. And I saw this in the theater. Did you see it in the theater?
Yeah, I did see this in theaters.
I got a story.
That's nice.
Of course I do, right? Okay. I saw this on a double date, all right? And the girls that we were with were so disturbed by the first 20 minutes of this movie when he kidnaps the girl and he's doing the necrophilia and whatnot that they literally made us leave the theater and we went and crashed the original Kings of Comedy. And I don't know if that movie was twice as funny because we had just come from this darkness, but we were laughing our asses off. And actually, it felt like a relief to me, although my buddy and I went and checked it out a second time and fully. So I feel like I saw this movie 1.5 times, if you will, or 1.25 times in the theater.
Right.
But it was disturbing in a theater with the sound effects and a big screen and, you know, an audience full of people. Very, very uncomfortable in this movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, what we watched was on Amazon, right?
Yes,
It was the old DVD pull, you know, the old
transfer.
Transfer, thank you. And so it's literally a print transfer. So watching this, you know, it has low... or it has the cigarette burns, right? The real change markers.
Oh, the color bleeding all over?
Oh, yeah. It has low contrast, right? It looks like a 90s / the early 2000s film print. I mean, it looks exactly like how you would see it had it been projected in a theater, which I thought was not only great, but kind of made me like this movie watching it this time around even a little bit more.
I absolutely agree. It looks better on the DVD that I own because at least there's no bleeding on the lettering and the reds and whatnot, but it added a certain charm to the movie and a kind of a greasy grindhouse feel to it that I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I felt. Although the DVD, I got to give a quick complimentary shout out to New Line Platinum Series. When they used to do DVDs right in the early part of the knots, this came out in 2000, so I think this probably hit around 2001. So
was this a cardboard?
Yeah, it has the cardboard. I have it in my hand right now. I'm looking at it. And it's got, I mean, the widescreen version, of course, because it doesn't even fit a full widescreen television nowadays. But feature commentary by a slew of people, documentaries, and then has this beautiful DVD-ROM feature, which was a script-to-screen transfer. Whereas the movie plays, the script scrolls on it. And a few DVDs had that, including the original Pirates of the Caribbean. And I really like that feature. I wish they continued to do that with Blu-ray. There's no reason they don't. I wish they bring that back. So if anyone hears this out there, lobby for it. Help me. It's just fun to watch the original screenplay and see what kind of changes are going done in real time.
What was different? Yeah, I agree. I like that on a couple of the DVDs as well.
I missed this.
This was up for an Academy Award. Did you know that?
I did not know that. What was this nominated for?
Best Makeup, which I would agree as 100%. Well,
I would actually put this up for not only that. I would put it up for production design, art design, not only makeup. But special effects, even.
Let me tell you something. Jennifer Lopez, Vince Vaughn, and Vincent D'Onofrio were all up for Blockbuster Entertainment Awards as well. And Jennifer Lopez won.
Oh, we got a winner in the house.
Hello. Yeah.
I missed the Blockbuster Entertainment Award. I totally forgot about that until you said that. You worked in a Blockbuster. I worked in a Blockbuster. Not the same store, not the same time, but we both worked in Blockbuster. And do you recall that when they had that coming up, they would have like these voting booths in the store, or like a little thing you could like rip off and put it in there? Do you recall that? Like it was like a little notepad?
I do. I mean, this had long since gone when I worked there, but I do remember that. Yes.
Like it had any sort of validity. We would just clean that out eventually and throw that shit away.
Oh, yeah. It was the Blockbuster Entertainment Award.
Yeah, exactly. Things like Best Kiss, Best Action Sequence. I mean, those are really important
awards. That was MTV,
awards, wasn't
it?
Oh, I forgot there was a distinction. I mean, I forgot that Blockbuster Entertainment Awards were like below MTV Movie Awards, which in itself are a joke. The Cell was directed by Tarzan Singh, who is a gifted visual storyteller. I know you're not a big fan of him, but this has got to be his finest film.
Yeah, this is his least weird movie, I'd say. I mean, if you want to talk actual movies, you're talking Mirror Mirror, Immortals, and The Fall. Which I'm not a fan of any of those.
Selfless as well, the Ryan Reynolds.
Selfless as well. And to be true, that's actually the most normal movie.
Yeah.
Now that you do, you remind me of that, yes. But this is definitely the most palatable for me. I like this movie. And I think that having the Vince Vaughn character stuff and that FBI stuff, nails it down a little bit nicer for me, or pulls it back into reality a little bit more, if that makes sense. You know, so it's not just all weird antics. We're not just running around doing weird stuff for weird stuff's sake. Like everything kind of has a purpose in this.
Absolutely. I think that this is really, you could tell that he got his training on music videos, specifically Nine Inch Nails videos, and it's visually...
An REM, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it owes a lot to the music video training he got, but I thought that a little bit of the late Nightmare on Elm Street movies are evident in this. With, do you get that little nod to like 4, 5, and 6 when they enter the dream world and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it definitely has that very horror feel to it. Even when at the beginning of the movie, when it's not a horror movie, right? And she's just in that little kid's mind trying to reach out and make a connection with him. It's creepy.
Terrifying. This movie is terrifying. This is, and it's also, like you said, a legitimate crime thriller, a la Seven and Silence of the Lambs for at least the first act.
The stuff that happens in real, the stuff that this Vincent D'Onofrio character, who is this serial killer who captures women, right, and puts them in a glass room cell. And then fills it with water. Yeah, his cell, right, and then he's also his mind is the cell. And then fills it with water and drowns them, and then takes their dead bodies and hangs himself from hooks and jerks off over him. It's insane, right? But that's more horrific than anything that happens in the mind, I guess. Like I don't know, it feels safer when they're inside of the mind stuff than it does in real life in this. And that's something I like about this, because that would be kind of true for what they've said.
Well, I watched a Jeffrey Dahmer documentary recently, and with the necrophilia and the way that they cut his hair and had his whole wardrobe, it's extremely similar to the way things went down with Dahmer and the look. So that's got to be intentional, especially during that
time.
He
definitely has, has the look where you look at him and you go, oh, that guy's a serial killer.
But I thought that the first... first sequence even with Lopez in the dream is the closest visual representation to a nightmare I've ever seen in a movie, including Jacob's Ladder, which has some good ones. That sequence with the horse and she turns around and it's wooden, and the way that their voices are slightly slowed down, and you know, the audio and the dunes and the, and all that, it's just, it's beautifully done, but it's eerie to me. It's very like a lucid dream, and right away you're in this world and you believe it. And some of that visual design, once again, I mean, with the first one, they named Carl Rudolph Stegler. I like that they gave him the first full name, like John Wayne Gacy. And, you know, they really did a good job here making it feel, like you said, like a real world, so that when you get into this sci-fi shit, it doesn't feel like Face Off, if you will.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I mean, Jennifer Lopez plays a social worker who goes into, I guess the idea is comatose people's minds and tries to bring them out of it, right?
Yeah.
So they have this technology that allows her to do that. And it does, like, that first scene does set it up to where she's in control. Not necessarily 100% because she's in someone else's mind, but she's going to stand her ground. She's going to be, you know, a strong person and be able to do this, which plays off well when she has to go into the serial killer's mind, right? Which is all sorts of fucked up.
Right. And it's interesting that when she gets in the mind, the look, he's the king in this kingdom, and she's got going on, it really, that the movie takes its own fantastical turn at that point into the absurd, but also into this nightmarish realm. I mean, it, to me, it's very striking, the imagery of the purple cape on the wall, character that whose arms are a bit too long, who comes doing cartwheels in, that's just the things of nightmares. It really is to me. I just, this really hits on a certain emotional point for me that is so uncomfortable yet captivating at the same time. And then you have the child and what the child's against, and you almost develop this sympathy for a character who's done nothing sympathetic at all on screen.
Well, yeah, it helps that they portray him as that, and the innocent child, right? That part of his persona,
his psyche,
is still innocent, right? Obviously. And then you have that evil side, it's kind of warped him to become the serial killer that he is.
D'Onofrio is absolutely terrifying in this movie, right? Is he not just fucking disturbing?
D'Onofrio is one of the best actors out there, period. And if you go back even to these younger days when he's not fat, because I don't know if you know this, but the fatter you get, the better you get at acting.
Apparently so. Brando said that. I think that's a famous Brando quote.
You know, it's true, because I'm looking at D'Onofrio, and he's better now than he was back then, which seems insane. I agree. He's just fantastic in this.
It's so startling. And I read an interview with him years ago, and he said that after he did this movie, his wife wouldn't sleep in the same bed with him for 2 weeks after the premiere. Yeah. And I don't know if that's actor exaggeration, but I mean, he is fucking creepy in this thing.
When he hangs, the necrophilia scene is just skin crawling.
Yeah, I agree. I
mean, it has to be the worst scene out of this entire movie. And it's something that you wouldn't, and I haven't seen anything like this in a very long time, but this is something that was pretty abundant throughout at least the late 90s and even the early 2000s and stuff. But of course they got away from the darker stuff after 9/11. But this was something that people weren't afraid to put on the screen back then. And I don't know. I don't know if it would ever come around again because it's so dark.
Are you surprised that this is rated R? I was kind of shocked that this was not the, I thought this was the uncut version. And there is no uncut version. This is just the theatrical release.
It feels like a rated R movie for around that time period.
I thought this is just exceedingly just
agree,
tense.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, right? You're not going to see this kind of stuff today. Even you can watch like serial killer movies and things like that nowadays, but nothing like this. I mean, horror in general, especially mainstream horror, doesn't even come close to what it used to be back then, unless it's humor, right? If there's humor in it, then it'll get super gross and stuff. But it seems like you can't go super dark anymore.
You can't maintain a consistently dark tone like they used to be. Movies used to get rated R just for tone. alone and not even for showing violent things. And if you go back and watch that sequence you're talking about, where he's suspended there and doing all that, because I restarted the movie and watched it from there.
You watched that scene a couple times, did you?
Well, no, I wanted to make sure I recalled everything before we got on the air. And as I didn't realize that was the scene that it was going to start on when I hit the DVD menu. But I recognize that, like, they don't show all that much. It's a lot of editing, and it's a lot of sound effect, and it's a lot of your mind's filling in the blanks, kind of like the stab in the heart in Pulp Fiction. You know, it's not really there. It's what your mind is making out to be. And so that they use a lot of that in this movie with editing, and especially with the sequences where he's kidnapping the woman. That's not really that graphic, but it's really when you see him basically using jiu-jitsu to straighten her out and to make her conform to him. It's very disturbing, and it's just a long shot. I don't know. That movie gets under my skin is what I'm trying to say.
The worst part of the movie, though, is when Vince Vaughn goes to the wherever it is. This, I don't know. It's not a steel factory, but what the hell is it? Like the – it's like he's trying to find the girl, and he knows where she is, and she knows he's somewhere around there, and he's just looking for the door or whatever. That's the dumbest part of the whole movie.
The whole thing, I think that's a bit of a plot hole in itself to have that nobody checked about this Carver, you know, oh, yeah, it's in Bakersfield. So you're not going to check on the company.
They didn't even need the whole movie didn't even need to happen.
They checked so hard on this dog in this pickup, but not on the machines that he's using, these special tools.
They're jumping in the guy's mind, and all it took was a simple little bit of detective work, and you could have just gone and found her.
He also knew that he'd already seen that thing before he went in the dream, so I thought that was kind of dumb. Like, well, you didn't even need to go in the brain, but they needed to have a movie here. So, and I think that The Cell is a really good movie because, for me, I can't tell where the narrative's going in this thing. Even rewatching it, I forgot where they were going, and I forgot the whole thing about her wanting to save him and then bringing him into her mind. It's a good story.
I agree. Well, it's a kind of a case where the story's broken in a way, right? Like, it has the skips and starts and stops, and it's really two movies in one. And so it's kind of like this weird mishmash where you kind of get lost in a certain timeline, right, in a certain like moment of what's happening, and you forget there's all this other stuff that's happening in the movie,
which I think they're cognitive of, because they trick you with some beautiful use of slow motion in this movie, the costume design. Although I gotta make one gripe about the costumes. I love those suspended costumes when they're in air like that. I think it just looks beautiful. It looks like our anatomy underneath, the muscle and the tissue and whatnot. But it's howlingly laughable that they put cheap rag towels on their face. They couldn't get a helmet or something. I thought that is such a cheesy move.
It's very futuristic, though. I mean, that's what you're not getting, how futuristic that is.
Sewn into the mouthpiece. Get the fuck out of here.
It's got stuff on it, and you can't, like, it's just technology beyond technology. Like, you just can't even imagine. I don't know. I'm sure that has some sort of meaning.
I could hear the production or the prop guy or the wardrobe guy saying what you're saying. Oh, yeah, it looks futuristic. Look, it's like what they would do in the future.
Yeah, it's great.
Otherwise, I mean, the costumes in this are very well done, including all of those really fantastic costumes and, you know, fantasy type stuff. Those dream sequences are like a Hell's fantasy, right? It's as dark as anything in the Hellraiser movies or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. Perhaps a little more dark, because Hellraiser always feels too fantastical to be true, whereas this kind of is so set in reality. Even the stuff in the mind is kind of, because you're in someone's mind and stuff, and the emotions are at least real. You know, what she's uncovering, what he's showing to her, all those things. It's all like grounded outside of being in his mind, right? What's happened in real life and stuff.
Do you think that the little boy, the subplot with Edward, the child that she's working with when the movie starts and at the end there, do you think that's necessary? I thought that was kind of super floss, but I thought maybe at the end if they could have done...
It is necessary, though. Mm-hmm.
What, to show that she's not afraid initially? To back down to these kids?
No, I mean, that's a nice setup and everything, but you have to explain what's going on. I guess it would be weird if it, because where would it start then, with the FBI agents?
I just thought the whole little boy thing and he's a billionaire's kid, and that's never really figured out. I thought at the very end when she brings him into his mind, I thought it would have been clever to all of a sudden see the boy version of Stagler, like he had planted a seed and he wasn't leaving and he was messing things up. I thought that would have been a great little ending, but they didn't go for it. I thought that was a missed opportunity.
That'd be darker. I don't know. I mean, didn't they kind of explain that that couldn't happen? Although, well, I mean, it kind of almost did, didn't it?
Yeah, that's what I thought. He almost took over Mind Over at the very end there.
Know.
And they killed him just in time. I mean, there's some obviously plot holes in this thing, but it, yeah. in the moment it works. I know we usually play this or that on our regular podcast, but I'm going to give you a this or that one-off question.
Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, me too. M. Night Shyamalan or Tarzan Singh?
Well, Shyamalan.
Yeah, you go Shyamalan over Singh?
God, yes.
Based
all
on
the
what?
Way.
I don't know. I have to say,
based
remember,
on all
99
the movies, what do you mean?
That you had The Sixth Sense, and then you had this coming right after, and they're both you know, Indian-born filmmakers or Indian-American filmmakers, and I thought that they were on the same trajectory in that they obviously are both extremely talented, but they've had some rocky missteps in their career, and M. Night has rebounded a little bit better than Singh. Although I think Singh's a better visual storyteller, and I find his movies a lot more interesting to watch.
But he's not a good story. I mean, visual storyteller. Okay. Yeah, sure. He makes great music videos. That's not a movie, though, you know? I mean, I don't really care about the visuals. M. Night Shyamalan is a visual filmmaker. He's very good at that, right? It's not fantastical maybe all the time, but I don't know. It's more classical. It's better in that sense.
I mean, I rewatched Unbreakable, and I just keep railing against that, and it's so fucking boring visually. I just couldn't believe how many long shots there were in it over dialogue.
I don't know if it's even a fair comparison, because I don't think Tarzan has, he hasn't had the career yet.
I mean, it's been 18 years since this movie. It ain't happening. It happened, bro.
Well, then it's not happened, but then that's my point, right? I mean, he's made, five movies.
Right. I thought The Immortals was fantastic. I love
The
Immortals.
Is terrible.
How do you say that? I mean, what don't you
how
like
do you
about
say
it?
That? Because it's ridiculously stupid.
But it's a lot of the same visual shit as this, looking back on it. Matte paintings and all sorts of shit.
That's not enough, right? I don't care about the visuals. That's not, I mean, look at a painting then. It's not a
and
movie.
This reminds me of
that. To me, it just doesn't, Yeah, that's fine, but that's not going to work for me. That's why I don't like Tim Burton shit anymore either. And everyone's like, oh, but it's Tim Burton. I'm like, yeah, I get it. It looks fine, but it doesn't make for a good movie.
Well, let's be on a sidebar on Tim Burton. I love how people now defend Tim Burton with his, like he's the greatest thing when a Tim Burton movie comes out. And he always made shitty movies. Most of his movies are shitty. He's got some gems in there. But I mean, I can give you 15 shit ones.
Fairly decent, but yes, I know, I agree. That's what I'm saying. The majority of his stuff is not very good.
Yeah, I mean, he had a sweet spot in there. And then, I mean, you start getting real rocky after Ed Wood for a while. Like, real rocky. Talking about Planet of the Apes, we're talking about Mars Attacks, that Willy Wonka travesty. I mean, this is a lot of weird shit. Even the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory one was fucking ridiculous.
But, yeah.
People go for it. I think Sleepy Hollow, honestly, and maybe Big Fish are his last.
People like the look of things. It's what you just said about classics. This guy, right? It's kind of the same argument that you just enjoy. You're along for the ride because you like the view, right?
Yeah, although this is a
dark works
view.
For you. Yeah, I mean, not The Cell necessarily, but something like The Fall or Immortals, you know. I mean, yeah, I agree. You wouldn't necessarily say that for The Cell, but yeah.
Did you know that this spawned a sequel?
Kind of. That really sounds familiar. What was it?
It was a direct-to-DVD sequel released
in
June.
That sounds so familiar.
Of 2009, starring nobody, and it's horrendously bad. I tried to Netflix this back in the day, like when the mail-in service was around, and because you couldn't find this anywhere, and I was a big fan of The Cell, I thought, so I would watch this, and
Cell 2,
it's unwatchable.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I don't know what the rating is on IMDb, but it's got to be dismal. Because the movie itself, it's almost like this movie was made and they threw the name on it.
Well, you've read the synopsis, right?
Well, let our listeners,
it's
you got it right there?
Nothing like this.
Exactly.
So the FBI agent Maya has developed the ability of psychically connect with other people after being murdered 6 times and brought back to life by the sadistic serial killer Cusp. What the fuck is this?
She's like a mentalist, basically.
Yeah, this is terrible. This is nothing like the original.
I have a feeling that they bought that movie, and I think it must have been Lionsgate or whoever New Line owned it, And yeah, it was Warner Home Video, and they just threw the title on there because I don't think they made that with the intention. If they did, they're fucking idiots because it's easily one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It goes in that list. It's terrible. And you know it's a shit sequel if it's made 10 years after the original and they threw it directly to DVD. It's like this ad I keep seeing for Benchwarmers 2. Like, that's going to be any good because the original is such a fucking gem. I mean, it lets me know where Chris Klein's been. I mean, Jesus.
I know. How is Rob Schneider not in that? He probably is. Is he?
He's got to be in it. He's got to be. I mean, they must, if they hold, seriously.
He's got to be in it, right?
He's not too busy. I'll tell you that. Although I like Rob Schneider, but
Deuce Bigelow 3, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but The Cell 2 is, don't even, do yourself a favor and never watch that. That goes on the bin of useless DVD sequels, and there's a lot of them out there. It's like Roadhouse 2. Well, you glad we went back and watched this one, or?
Yeah, I am, because I liked it a lot more this time around, and I loved the experience of watching that the actual film print, which I haven't seen an actual film print in so long, even though it was still a digital representation of it, but God, it was beautiful.
I know, I wanted to see the coming soon trailers for it, you know, at that point with the, I felt like I was watching a VHS cassette, which was really nice.
If they had added in the sound of the projector just you know, quietly in the background, that would have been heaven.
You wouldn't have minded just the small clicking noise back
yes.
there. This was like a critical success on its release too. And Trevor and I, who didn't particularly care for it when it came out, I think I'd say I respected it, but I didn't care for it. But I thought it was such a pristine film. I thought there was no wrong frame in it. I still feel like that. So I didn't ever really want to go back and tarnish the memory. It's kind of slow here, or it doesn't do this, or it's sloppy. But going back just reinstated how pristinely thought out this movie is from a visual standpoint and all the departments. And the narrative, I still think, sets itself up very well and is engaging the whole way through. For an hour and 50 minute movie, it moves very well.
Yeah. It doesn't feel as long as it is. And I don't know, watching this, seeing this now, where it's kind of isolated from the timeline of when it actually came out, may do it a little bit favor, I guess, you know what I mean? Like, in the sense that we're not used to seeing something like this at this point, especially something so dark and stuff, which you were kind of used to seeing back then. It's almost the shock value is a lot more.
It's pronounced. I'd
meaty,
say.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. What would you call it?
It's just more you pronounced. It's more just, in the forefront than I remember.
It hits you a little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And that's, it also, you know, watching something like this years removed, this was like ubiquitously, it ads everywhere. It's just, there's a lot of hype surrounding this movie too, because Lopez was rising and Vaughn was rising.
Right.
This director was hot at the time. So this was expected to do well. And you watch something when the hype has worn off or you've forgotten about it. And there's certain shots in here where I thought, oh, that was a trailer shot. That was a trailer shot. I remembered it. Mm-hmm. But it works better because you're not, your expectations are not sky high, which is probably half the reason I don't like some of these movies, because I go to see, and the marketing gets you so jazzed, and you go see it, and you're like, that's not the movie I came to see, which we've talked about on many podcasts. But having been removed from it, this thing plays very well, and I'm glad we went back and watched it. I don't think I could convince my girlfriend to watch it, because it's fucking dark. So
yeah.
If you guys haven't seen The Cell, I would say rent it, watch it, find it out there. I don't think it's on Amazon currently, but it usually cycles back on one of these streaming services. But recognize that you're getting yourself into a mind fuck. And it's probably the best mind blast since, better than Flatliners, better than Altered States, definitely better than Lawnmower Man or any of those other kind of quasi-futuristic things. Right? I know. Have you watched The Lawnmower Man, though, recently? It's terrible. One and two suck.
Listen, I'll tell you, the only reason to watch The Lawnmower Man when it came out back in the day was because it had boobs in it.
No, it had special effects. The most groundbreaking special effects since T2. That's what it said on the poster.
Right, it had boobs.
It did. It had a lot of those. That's why it was a big favorite around my friends. We didn't watch it for Pierce Brosnan, that's for sure.
No, yeah, terrible. Terrible movie.
Well, we both recommend you guys check out The Cell. We want to thank you for joining us on this 29th retro episode. You can check out all of our back retros and our past podcasts on MovieMavericks.com, Podbean, Stitcher, or wherever else you may be getting podcasts. We want to thank you guys again for joining us. I'm Jason. Speaking for Trevor, we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!